Hello and welcome to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. Today, my special guest is Ian Elliott. He's the founder of One Love Holistics, the Palo Santo company. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Katie.
So Ian and I actually just met. I actually didn't even know your face before we started. So this is really fun to have you come and get to meet you. And I know normally in business, it's like, don't share who your supplier is. Someone could copy you. But I definitely want to share that you guys are our Palo Santo supplier because I'm really fascinated by, and I think it's really cool what you're doing by sharing the entire story of how you are able to share Palo Santo with the world.
Thank you so much. We're definitely seeing a shift in that transparency and it's becoming more of the norm.
Yeah, I think your transparency was the word I was looking for. I think the transparency and everything that you share, it is really powerful stuff. But I would love to get to know a little bit more about you and how you even got into the realm of Palo Santo.
Wow. Yeah, of course. So I went to Berkeley and graduated in 2013. After graduation, I spent a little bit of time traveling around, trying to figure out, you know, what my future had in store. And, you know, one thing led to the next. And before I knew it, I was being guided down to South America, specifically the country of Ecuador. And yeah, you know, it was just one synchronicity after the next, really.
That's amazing. When did you first go to Ecuador?
So 2015 is when One Love Holistics started. It really kind of started as just a side project. You know, I was working on a few different projects at the time, and everything kind of happened really quickly. The name, the branding, really... Essentially, you know, I use a lot of Palo Santo just in my daily routines and in my own life and journey, and I decided, you know, that it does help me quite a bit, and a lot of my friends and family and people really enjoy it. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to have fun. I'm going to go out this weekend, and I'm going to make some little Palo Santo bundles. I'm going to make some bags, and I'm going to go to Dolores Park, which is a well-known hangout in San Francisco in the Mission District. And it's also ground zero for a lot of entrepreneurs who started working in the streets as street vendors in SF. And I went out there just totally for fun, no pressures, no anything. And it was almost instantaneous. I mean, I sat down on the ground and I opened this little box that I had. It was like a little almost treasure chest. And I had these little tags, which I had made. They were really awesome. We actually still use them in some of our products today. It's handmade hemp paper from a European paper mill that this family's been making paper for like 2,000 years using these same techniques, and they're really awesome tags. Got a couple little stamps made, you know the routine, got the tags, got the stamps, and made these little bundles and went out to Dolores that day. I sat down, you know, no more than probably 10, 15 seconds after lighting a Palo Santo stick. It was literally someone had just appeared before me saying, "Hey, is that Palo Santo? I would love some of that." And I said, "No problem," you know, gave him some Palo Santo. And I was selling the bundles, but I was like, "Hey, no problem. Here, take a stick of Palo Santo." And I mean, literally that afternoon, it was just one person after the next coming up. I'd sold a few of these bundles just to recuperate my cost. And at that moment in time, I said to myself, well, there may or may not be something more here. You know, this is just a fun side project. And in quick time, I began working the streets of San Francisco. And I started as a vendor in SF, doing all types of events. And Dolores Park was kind of like one of our main venues at the time on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays when it was really busy. And I don't know if you've ever been to Dolores Park, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so definitely check it out next time you're in San Francisco. It gets a little rowdy over there sometimes, but the cool thing about the park is that there are all these characters. They're the characters of Dolores Park. So you have the guy with the special truffles. You have the guy who's got the coconuts, and you have, you know, all of these different, you've got the what do they go by, the halo gypsies who sell the flower halos for your hair, and all these really unique characters, you know. At this point in time, it kind of feels a little bit of the remnants of San Francisco, just things have shifted so radically in the Bay Area. And It was really fun, you know, and before I knew it, I kind of just stepped into this role of like the Palo Santo guy in Dolores Park. And I remember in at that particular phase, I would be walking down streets like downtown in SF, and I would just hear people yelling out like Palo Santo, like from across the street. And it was just really interesting time. And 2015 was a major transitional time period for me. And I was trying to explore other things and find my way. And yeah, you know, one thing led to the next. And before I knew it, those next few months, I'd been out there. I'd had a couple of friends with me. And it wasn't until this event we have every year in the Bay Area, it's called Harley Strictly Bluegrass. Really awesome festival. It's a world-class production. It's put on for free. No admission is charged. Tens of thousands of people come out. And it's not just bluegrass. It's all types of music. And it's a great time. Anyone listening, if you're in San Francisco doing Harley Strictly, please.
When does it happen?
Visit.
What month?
Generally, it's in October.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's really awesome. And we went to Harley Strictly. I was there with a buddy of mine, good friend, Brooks Jiangbian. And I'll never forget, we had just the most amazing weekend. It was awesome. It was one synchronicity after the next, just like one magical encounter after the next. And Palo Santo was being the catalyst. It was the platform for these connections. And, you know, I just remember talking with my buddy being like, wow, this is so cool and so fun, you know. And at the end of Sunday, it was the last day of the festival. You know, we'd obviously made a bunch of Palo Santo bundles and we had these products and our oils. And at the time, you know, I was a renegade street vendor. I didn't even have a seller's permit or a business license or anything at that point. You know, just had a stamp on a tag that said One Love Holistics. And at the end of Sunday, I'll never forget, there were literally like two dozen people standing around us, like waiting in line, just surrounding us, trying to get Palo Santo sticks. And I looked over at Brooks and I was like, I don't have any more. Like, I just sold the last bundle. I'm like digging through my bag, like seeing if I have loose sticks, at which point there were a few loose ones that I just grabbed and I handed them out. And I remember looking at my buddy, and I mean, there were still all of these people standing in front of us, and it was getting very dark. And I was just like, I don't have anything left. Like, you guys have a great day. Like, we have to go. And we left. And I remember standing there with Brooks, waiting for the Muni, and just saying to him, you know, I think there's something more here. And I think it's time to get to Ecuador. So, and it kind of just kicked off the whole journey right from there.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, you were testing the market. You got to start somewhere.
yeah, exactly. You know, I'm honestly very proud of those grassroots and that origin, because, you know, a lot of times these days, you know, it's really easy to come into the space, take capital, you know, to grow a bit faster than what we would consider organic or natural growth. And, you know, we've been real from the beginning. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So for somebody that's listening, that's like, Palo Santo, what are they talking about? Palo Santo is from a tree in Central and South America. You maybe should describe this more than I should.
Is this my job? Okay. Yeah, so Palo Santo is a type of aromatic heartwood we use in various types of aromatherapy. So it's used most commonly in its form of incense sticks. We also use it to distill essential oil. And it's very popular. It's really experienced a huge surge in popularity in the last 5 years in particular. And I mean, it was definitely increasing in popularity when I started working with Palo Santo, but I certainly didn't even anticipate the extent to which we would see this growth happen so quickly the last few years here. But it's really powerful stuff, you know, and everyone has their own opinion. They have their own experience. And that's great. That's beautiful. We all have our own opinions. And, you know, for some, it's a very powerful tool that brings them clarity, and it helps them, you know, along their own journey. And for others, it's nothing more than just a stick of wood. So.
Yeah, I definitely remember the very first time I smelled it. My teacher, Jana Romer, she's a yoga teacher that I really, really look up to. I remember her burning it in class and just being like, what is that smell? I am so drawn to it. And her explaining what it was. And that was before you were finding it literally in every little boutique or store. Now you can really see it's everywhere, but at least here on the West Coast. But Yeah, I remember connecting to it right away. And I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, or maybe even when Bentley was in the podcast, my other half, my roommate, doesn't appreciate the smell. So yeah, there are different opinions, but that makes it even more sacred for me when I do burn it.
Of course.
When I hold like a moon circle or I'm teaching a yoga class, but I have yet to have somebody in my moon circle not like it. Everyone really is excited to, it's the way we start it off. We pass it around. I go around with a feather and it just really sets the tone, drops me like right into that meditative state.
Palo Santo has this way of making itself very known to those who are intertwined with its own journey. So
yeah. And when you were describing burning it at the park and people coming up, one of the only booths I've done, I haven't really done very many in-person retail events. I haven't had that much luck actually with the in-person, but the one that I did that was outdoors, I was burning it at my booth and it did just attract people that like were connected to that smell to come over. And it felt like if they were attracted to it, I was obviously going to vibe with them.
Absolutely.
So I totally was brought back to that moment. I totally get the magic there. So what is it like when you do go to Ecuador?
Amazing. It's awesome. It's a lot of work, but it's not all work. So we work in Ecuador and Peru. So the journey for me really started in Ecuador. No sooner after all these things have been happening, you know, that summer and working and doing all the events, I was quickly guided to one of my main teachers to this day. He is the first man who distilled Palo Santo wood essential oil and brought it to the U.S. market with the help of another well-established and well-known botanist here on the West Coast. And it was really amazing because the synchronicity was guiding me the entire way. And in general, you know, I allow the signs to guide my next move. And obviously with Palo Santo, that's no different. So it was great. Not only did I reconnect with some old friends of mine who I hadn't seen in many years through Palo Santo, ironically enough, I was brought to this teacher and it was one synchronicity after the next. And you know, full transparency, Ecuador was the last stop because I'd been doing all this research and I'd been reading, you know, where does the tree live? Like, where is its native habitat? And, you know, reading all about Mexico and Central America. So I said, all right, like, I'm going to start in Mexico and I'm going to work my way down. And on that trip, I want to say it was like a half a dozen countries that I was traveling with a buddy of mine. And I was essentially searching out for the Palo Santo and, you know, going to these different towns and communities and asking people, you know, do you know Palo Santo, or like using other common names for the tree in these areas? And some people would say things like, oh, what is that? I don't know. Other people would say, yes, absolutely. I know it. The tree is here. Like, it's very coveted. Like, only certain people have the knowledge to even find the trees here. And it was really, really amazing experience. And that was about 6 months in total. And I spent the last month, I'd finally made it down to Ecuador. And I spent the entire month working with this teacher, Dante, and he taught me a lot about Palo Santo, stayed at his house. I was getting covered in dust head to toe all day, every day for about 4 weeks straight. And that was my first real foray into the life of Palo Santero.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So Ecuador is then your first place that you really like hunker down.
Indeed. You know, Ecuador, well, is where it all started, you know, and it wasn't until the next trip down that I had discovered what the trade looks like in Peru, which is a bit different. Peru is much larger than Ecuador. It's a bit more of an economic powerhouse just in terms of the country. And, you know, the landmass is just much greater there too. You know, northern Peru is huge. And doing some trips down there and like seeing from a firsthand perspective, like what it looks like, you know, and I'd had this familiarity from working and traveling in Ecuador. It kind of gave me a better context to enter Peru with. And I went to Peru thinking about how, you know, my teacher originally approached like what he's doing in Ecuador, you know, and the fact of the matter is not everybody in this space is doing things the right way. And this is true of all spaces, no matter what the product, no matter what the market, especially of a product that is a botanical, that comes from nature. You know, anytime there's any commercial value associated, that will naturally attract an unsavory element, as such as the nature. Yeah, you know, one thing led to the next. Once again, synchronicities were guiding the entire way, and I made it down to Peru. And, you know, that first trip down there, I realized very quickly, okay, this is where we need to set up. So, you know, in quick time after that, actually rented an office in Lima, Peru. And, you know, we're a vertically integrated business. Lima is the home of our South America operations. So our North America office is located in San Francisco Bay, and our South America office is located in Lima, Peru.
That's so incredible. Yeah. I love that you have like actual feet on the ground in these places.
Absolutely.
So how does it look? For those of you that don't know, the Peruvian Palo Santo and the Ecuador Palo Santo, they have a different smell. Correct.
They do, you know. Actually, one of the hypotheses that's being researched at this moment in time is that Bursa graveolens is actually composed of a number of subspecies. So I don't want to go too much into our our research partner's thesis and spoil too much here, but this idea that external environmental conditions actually affect the growth of the trees, and that different regional pockets are actually home to different subspecies of the Palo Santo tree. And we know that there do exist different subspecies, and you know, within Bursera there are so many species. You know, graveolens is just but one. So it'll be really interesting to see what that research reveals in the next 12 months here, and to see what the findings reveal. You know, we have a partner who's been out in the field collecting herbarium specimens from all throughout Central and South America, and I'm very excited to see what those analyses show.
That's so cool. Yeah, just from the smell, I know that I connect with the Ecuador Palo Santo a little bit more. Has a bit of the coconutty smell, a little
Absolutely.
Bit sweeter.
Yes, it's very gentle.
Yeah,
it is gentle. The Ecuadorian origin.
Yeah, and then the Peruvian kind of feels like it has like a spicer.
Absolutely. It's very, very strong, very pungent, very resin heavy, you know, and at the most fundamental level, right? It's like Peruvian origin versus Ecuadorian origin. There are many parallels between the two, obviously, but the Ecuadorian is just a little sweeter, you know, Peruvian's a little spicier.
Can you tell just from your eyes looking at the two different trees, like, could you tell which ones from where? Do
the they look trees,
different?
Not so much, but the now there are certain trees which actually grow a bit smaller, and those ones are, you know, you can very distinct when you're looking at them. But in terms of the tree structure, it is pretty similar. There are some differences between the regions, but it's the processed wood that you can really see the difference in. So, and I mean that more than anything, it's the aromatic notes that you're getting off the wood, but even the appearance, you know, it comes down to like how it's being cut, how it's being processed. Is it by hand? Is it machine? Is it milled? You know, and there are many different methods that communities are using to actually cut the stick. So when you see that really round cut, you know, generally that's distinctive of a Ecuadorian stick. Not always, but most of the time.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, we haven't touched on this yet, but one of the main ways that I got connected with you, the way that I even found you, was I was so excited to see the articles that you posted on your website.
Thank
and
you.
The research that you posted. I don't even know how long ago this would have been, like 6 months ago or sometime in the spring. If you guys haven't seen it, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but there were posts going around saying that Palo Santo was endangered. You should stop burning it. If you're selling it, you should stop selling it. And immediately when I saw these, I was like, whoa, this plant that I love, like, is this true? I definitely have to get to the bottom of this. I don't want to, you know, be a part of any unsavory practices, selling it as well as just using it, my personal use. And that is, I was so happy to find your articles because everything that I had researched had said that that was incorrect. There wasn't any facts there. So for those of you that didn't know that was going on, that is how we connected. But where was the confusion? Why did this spread like wildfire?
Yeah, so 2019 has been quite the year in terms of misinformation within the Palo Santo sphere, as we like to say. And really the origin of this comes down to certain groups and individuals who essentially published incorrect data. And that data was then picked up very quickly by social media influencers who reposted these things. And as is the nature of social media, it spread like wildfire. And as we know, things don't need to be true in order to spread like wildfire. They simply need to be catchy. And when you promote a sensationalized headline like, oh, it's critically endangered and there are only 250 trees remaining in the wild, which is completely false, people are going to eat that up because it's such a popular product and so many people use it and they're so familiar and it's like, oh, wow, what's really going on? And, you know, the real heart of the matter is that there is a lack of information. There's a lack of real education, data, research for people to equip themselves with that knowledge and say, hey, actually, no, this is like the fact of what's happening at the source. And, you know, we've definitely seen a major reversal in that trend. While 2019 has had no shortage of repost and Palo Santo boycotts and all this, that, and the other, you know, research was conducted this year and it was officially published in August 2019, showing that Bursa graveolens, which is the correct species classification for the Palo Santo we all know and love, is actually of least concern status, with stable populations existing throughout Central and South America. And since that research has been published, we have seen a number of these individuals redacting their statements and actually deleting web pages, changing, and we're seeing a very quick shift in tone with this recent round of research that's come out. And the fact of the matter is even though the tree is classified as least concern status with the most up-to-date research we can have according to the IUCN Red List, that does not mean that the tree does not face any threat on the ground at the source in any habitat where it's native to. As I mentioned earlier, anytime you're dealing with any type of botanical product, conscious sourcing is critical and it's imperative. And unless you have people who are on the ground who understand this, it's very difficult to regulate and to ensure and to audit your sources and to make sure that things are being done in the right way.
Yeah. So how is it harvested? Let's touch on that as well.
Yeah. So most commonly, the wood, which is one of the most popular forms of the product that we see in all the sticks, all of the incense comes from the wood. It's gathered from the forest floor. And I know it can be a bit hard to think about. I mean, for me originally, you know, one of the first thoughts I had was like, how much wood is there really? Like, can it really all be gathered from the forest floor? Like with the global market, like, is there really enough to satisfy this increasing demand? And it wasn't until I started making trips into the forest and realized just how abundant the Palo Santo tree really is. It is the dominant tree species in this particular habitat of the tropical dry forest, and at least within northern Peru and southern Ecuador. And I quickly realized, you know, after being led to some really awesome partners and communities, that there is a spectrum. There's a spectrum within the trade. And, you know, there are some people and those of us who have an inner, you know, understanding and knowledge of what's going on. Like, we all know, you know, who the unsavory ones are. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I'll leave it at this. If you are ordering your Palo Santo products online from a source that has little to no information behind them, and they offer a great price and there is really no information about the company or pictures or any content. I mean, something, right? One thing that gets me is, you know, a lot of people talk about how all of the wood is naturally felled, but they don't have any pictures of trees on the ground. So, I mean, if it's really all gathered from the forest floor without the cutting of live trees, I mean, surely you can show some content that supports that position, right? And if you don't, and if you can't, then I would say, you know, you might want to look elsewhere. But even then, you know, it's difficult. And at the heart of it, you know, it's why are these people, because there are people who are cutting trees, okay? There's no sugarcoating that. It is a frowned upon practice, but the reality of the situation is it is a global market. And there are people who are going to pursue in any way they can to capture any penny or dollar. And, you know, that's really one of the primary reasons One Love Holistics has evolved into the entity it has, is because Palo Santo has become such a wildly popular product traded all around the world. And because, you know, this lack of a real standardized system that says, hey, you know, this is the correct way of doing things. And, you know, a lot of people like to flaunt like, hey, like we have our environmental certifications. Like, that's great. That's awesome. All of us have the environmental certifications, at least those of us who are operating consciously and legally. But even those environmental certifications are only but one piece of the pie. You know what I'm saying? It's like certifications have their own issues. And that's, you know, one of the major value adds we bring is that we independently audit all of our sources directly on the ground. So, you know, any certification system can be abused.
For sure. So then in Ecuador and Peru, are there certain governmental agencies that help to protect these plants?
Absolutely.
And you work directly with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So in both countries, the tree is protected. So, you know, anyone who is illegally cutting is in direct violation of the law. And I mean, they do punish accordingly. But the fact of the matter is, it's like, it's hard to catch some of this activity sometime. I mean, we're dealing with very rural zones, you know, and these regions are far off from the cities. And it really takes an inner, you know, it really takes like regulation from the inside out, you know, and it's like the communities who do things in the right way, it's like they communicate. And everyone understands like, hey, these guys over here, like they're doing it the right way. They're not cutting any trees. Like they're seemingly doing well, like they're sustaining, like how can we be more like them? And as we continue to influence the market in terms of like, hey, you know, question your sources, like ask your source these questions. And if they can't answer these questions, then you need to find another source. And yeah, it is regulated, it is protected, but even still, you know, once again, it's like those who are desperate will take desperate actions in pursuit of the dollar.
For sure. And I think you're right to say in every industry.
In every industry.
That doesn't mean boycott the industry.
Exactly. I mean, the food products we all eat, our entire cabinet, all of those products. Oh, you would be amazed at what journeys these inputs have gone through before they make it to our end consumer. You know, it's really fascinating.
So for the communities that you are supporting, what is that like? Like, it must be really cool to see in the past 5 years.
Absolutely. It's awesome. You know, I've certainly in my experience, like I've interacted with a spectrum of communities. So, you know, you know, when you find the really good people, because naturally you're guided to them, at least in my experience, you know, and I find that the ones who are truly environmentally minded and who are guided by higher purpose, and it is not solely a commodity to be processed and sold, but who have a bit more of a spiritual take to it. You know, these are the people we choose to align with, because we're on the same page in that regard. And, you know, Palo Santo is a tool. I mean, this Palo Santo is a platform to help bring livelihood, you know, to help sustain ethical economic empowerment is one of the terms we like to use directly on the ground. So, you know, it's a type of fear mongering to suggest that, you know, another one of the trending posts was that there was a lack of access to the native communities, which simply is not the case. I mean, Palo Santo wood is very abundant. Anyone who wants Palo Santo wood has no difficulty encountering it. And it's a type of fear narrative to scare people away from Palo Santo. Like, hey, don't use it. You know, native communities can't access it. It's cultural appropriation. It's this, it's that. You know, I mean, throw enough things and see what sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like that. And if you guys want to read more into this, you have eloquently written some articles on your website under education, I believe is the dropdown.
Yeah. Endangered, the future of love.
Yes.
Three-part.
Yeah. But I do think that's fascinating because you have seen, we were talking about one of your other products, which is the fruit essential oil from the Palo Santo tree.
Yeah.
And you have seen these communities thrive because of this fruiting season and harvesting.
Absolutely. The fruit is a major key to a holistically integrated Palo Santo trade, and it is nothing short of a godsend, truly. The tree, for those of you who may not be familiar, the tree actually bears a fruit annually. And it is just a small little fruit. It looks like a little pea, tastes like a little Palo Santo lime. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. We actually gather the fruit and we pulp it and we distill it to make 100% pure essential oil. And it is truly a revolutionary product for our space. And it's helping not only support these communities, unrelated to the gathering of wood, it is a way to ecologically manage existing tracts of land where the Palo Santo trees are living, and you know they will be there for many more years before they fall. And it just allows the community to have a more holistic approach to the trade of these products and not focus solely on the wood. So it's really a beautiful thing. And I have to say, right from the jump, I knew that the fruit was a major part of our work and our mission. And when it comes to conservation, you know, the fruit is the key.
Wow. I'm really excited to learn more about the fruit.
Absolutely.
And see if there's a way for me to like work with it. I'm so fascinated by all the oils. And
you let me know. We'll get that. Incense. We'll get that that bath bomb with the fruit. It'll be great.
Yeah, maybe that'll be our next one. But I did want to ask, so I've heard that it can be used as an insect repellent, mosquito repellent. Is that what it's used for?
It's very interesting. So at the source, you have a few different camps. You have the camp that says, oh, there's absolutely nothing spiritual about this wood at all. It is literally just another wood that is resin rich, and it's great for keeping the mosquitoes at bay. And, you know, it's burned for that purpose, especially on the coast. It's very popular and where the mosquitoes love to get you. And then you have the other camp that says, oh, mosquitoes, sure, but it's absolutely very much a, you know, metaphysically vibrant wood. There is more than meets the eye when it comes to Palo Santo. There's a reason Palo Santo is used in medicinal ceremonies all throughout South America. And, you know, all of these uses, they have roots, you know, like where does the origin, why is it used in these ceremonies? And it's just really interesting to see the spectrum of belief, you know, especially among the younger crowd and the older crowd, and just this multi-generational take on what exactly is Palo Santo. And there is no centrally, you know, recognized like usage. It's not like, oh, this is how it's looked at here. It's like, no, as with anywhere in the world, there's a lot of people and they all have a different take and a different opinion and they believe different things. So, you know, that's the beauty.
And you see that same like spectrum in both Ecuador and Peru.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Awesome.
So much of what you're talking about, I won't touch on this too much now, but I do want to get into it, is reminding me of like my dealing of crystals and gems, and like so much is paralleled. And
absolutely.
The same thing, only different industry.
Absolutely.
It's really fascinating.
Crystals and Palo Santo have a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of parallels going on there.
I really obviously like to use it to cleanse and clear. And
of course.
I really do. I swear, you guys, like if you put a crystal in the Palo Santo, it like dances with it. It's like really, you can tell if something is, you know, cleansing or...
Palo Santo is one of the best tools you can use to cleanse your stones.
Yeah. And I think I always suggest it as the safest way because so many can't be put into water or
right.
get heated up, or maybe you can get wet, but then if you go from hot to cold, they'll crack. And I'm just like, don't.
I mean, look at it like this. You know, this is one way I like to explain to people is like, hey, you know, we bathe. We bathe physically, right? Just like we need to bathe energetically. It's like, you go out there, you walk out that door, immediately when you hit the sidewalk, you are absorbing energies left and right. And just like at the end of the day, we feel like taking a shower and washing off all that dirt and grime that's accumulated in your experiences out and about in the city, you know, all those interactions you've had with people. Like you're always absorbing that energy, and that's really where, you know, the idea of cleansing comes in. Is it's just it's a reset. It's a purification, allowing you to shed those energetic layers that you've absorbed. So, you know, it keeps your own core essence clean.
I think we're on the same page.
Indeed.
On being a spiritual,
indeed,
a spiritual energetic thing. I really enjoy it. So where do you see this going for you? Do you have anything exciting on the horizon? I know you were very excited about the fruit oil.
Yes, the fruit is awesome. So we are developing a full line around the fruit. We are very excited to bring that to market in 2020. Most sustainable Palo Santo product line to date, bar none. Really excited to just continue to expand our network. For me, you know, one of my greatest joys is just being on the ground and being able to interact with all of the different, you know, community members and directors and our academic partners. And that's the greatest joy for me. And just being able to help, you know, it's like we're just helping. Like, that's it. You know, it's not like, oh, we're providing this platform and doing this for people. It's like, no, we're all playing our roles, you know, and fortunately for us, you know, One Love Holistics has proven to be an amazing platform for bringing people together and connecting and just allowing the oneness and love to rise to the surface, which at this moment in time, we need more of that, and we need it in high doses. So
I think that's why I connected so much to what you wrote with your articles around this, because that was your main theme. I felt like it
Indeed.
Was woven throughout.
Well, thank you for reading the articles. It's really amazing, the reception we got on those pieces, like just monitoring all the web traffic as soon as those came out. It was really, really quite the spectacle just to see what type of traffic we were getting on those pages, and literally from all around the world. I mean, it surged. I believe, you know, we were within a week of it being published, I want to say it was like in the top 5% of all blog posts on Shopify at that moment in time. And it was trending pretty seriously.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I've shared it several times. I still link it out to people. Just before we started recording yesterday, I put a post up asking people if they had questions. And of course, I did get a lot of people that were confused and thinking that this is a very endangered plant. So
right.
I've directed them to your article, but I'm also excited to now finally be able to share this podcast.
Absolutely. Of course. It's a pleasure to be here. And, you know, it's as many platforms as we can, we just try to get out the knowledge. And, you know, just like the introduction of the Future of Love article says, you know, we're not here to promote fear-based narratives. We're not here to promote falsified knowledge and information. We're simply here to share our firsthand insights and allow you guys to make your choice, you know, and that's just what it is. It's your own individual choice. Always be wary of those who try to dictate your own spiritual journey. Period.
That's a good advice across the board.
Indeed.
For sure. Yeah. And I know maybe I already said this, or I said before we started recording, but, I do connect with it on such a deep level that I had to know personally, like, what is going on.
Of course.
And I think that the article that you, or the research that you spoke about that came about in August, I think that's pretty amazing that we have such a new look at it.
Because, absolutely,
like you're saying, it is growing at such a fast pace.
It's a great way to end 2019, which, you know, has been a great year, but we've had no shortage of challenges and obstacles with everything going on externally. But yeah, like I say, you know, love and truth will always overcome fear and falsehoods.
My next question for you was, what was the biggest thing you've learned in this work? Maybe we've already touched on it, but it's a loaded question.
The biggest thing that I've learned in this work. Well, you know, I've learned a few things. One is that, you know, love is all. Love is the answer. And ultimately, if love is not the guiding principle of everything you're doing in your life, you should stop right now and reassess your priorities and perhaps reconsider your next step. And if it's not in alignment with love and oneness, then, you know, I I highly recommend reconsidering what you're doing. But if it is, that's great and that's awesome. And, you know, continue to empower others. You know, a smile goes a long way. It's like we're living in a very interesting time, you know, and especially with the explosion of the internet and the digital age. It has brought out a certain ugliness in a lot of people. And, you know, it's unfortunate because these tools and platforms allow us to connect to the world at large, you know, and to recognize this oneness and to connect with our brothers and sisters in all of these different pockets of the planet. So, you know, just be love. And beyond that, I've also learned that you certainly can't make everybody happy. That's for sure.
That is so true. That's a lesson I'm learning over and over.
That is for sure. Be authentic to yourself. You know, it doesn't matter. You're never going to make everybody happy. That's just a fact. It's all good. As long as you're being authentic and true to yourself and you're in alignment with that love, it's all good.
That's very, very sound advice. I always like to ask this to people. So like I said, we don't know each other very well. So this might be really interesting to hear. But what are some of the practices that you have to care for yourself? I know that we've really touched on what you do and putting energy out there in business. But what do you do internally, personally, to keep yourself healthy and check and
right.
happy.
Well, I'll be very honest here. You know, it's very difficult to establish, you know, those regular routines, especially when you're so caught up in the grind all day, every day. But for me personally, you know, spending time in nature is undoubtedly first and foremost. My beloved partner in time, Bridget Smith, we love to pass a lot of time hiking, walking, just being out in nature, you know, and especially since we're based in the East Bay, you know, we have relocated our new office in the East Bay within the last 12 months. And it's just, you're surrounded by the concrete jungle all the time, you know, so when you can break out and get out of that and reconnect with the source energy, like it just, it helps revitalize you in a major way. So I highly recommend to anybody who is listening to this to please get out there and just take a walk and just mellow out and allow your mind to just still and be calm for a moment. I know it is very difficult to do. But I think it's one of the most rewarding things that any of us can do is just getting outside, you know, and getting some fresh air.
For sure. You yeah. saw where I live. It's kind of the...
It's a great spot. It's a great spot. It's an awesome
spot.
It's
a great spot, but there is not much nature. I'll walk you when we leave through the courtyard and you'll see my little saving grace. There is a little green area in this building, the courtyard, but yeah, we have to go on trips and I have to at least drive out of the city and go hike. I totally agree with that.
It's the balance.
You're lucky you have the Muir Forest, though.
Oh, yeah. We have all types of amazing nature in Northern California. I mean, we're so blessed in that regard. You know, even in the East Bay, it's we have so many parks. It's just, it's great. It really is. Also, you know, having a dog. Like having a dog is great. I have to say, you know, we got our first puppy together this year, a little cattle dog named Aya. And she is just really beautiful and precious. And she really does just make every day that much easier. And I have to say that unconditional love from animals really just makes a difference. And it's awesome because you get to bring them on those nature hikes. So
for sure. Yeah. They like force you to go outside multiple times a day.
Indeed they do.
We just got Murphy and about a little over a year ago. And we had Roxanne, which she's my dog for the past almost 10 years exactly. But getting Murphy, I swear she was meant to be a part of our family. Just absolutely. Her energy is total different energy. But no matter like if we get frustrated or we're serious or whatever, she just has this like stupid, silly grin at all times. And it's just like, I can't be mad right now. Look at you.
It's great. They really do bring a lot of love.
Yeah, that's a really, really good gateway to self-care. Yeah, I have to agree, though, getting out into nature is huge. The only places I've really been up where you are, though, Alamary Falls. Have you been there?
The falls are nice, but I would recommend, you know, if it's on the radar, you go a little farther north, up toward, there's a little place called Prairie Creek State Redwood Park, and you get to walk through a canyon of ferns. You get to go see where they literally filmed Jurassic Park. Very beautiful. I highly recommend going out to that park, and it's quite a ways up there.
Oh, so cool.
But if you can make it, check it out.
Yeah. Bentley and I, we have different ideas on where we want to finally have like a home base. Right. We don't know if this is for sure. We love this space. Don't get me wrong, but I really want to get in nature. And I think that like Northern California might be a good balance.
I think you're onto something there.
I think we are. I think you
are. I think you're onto something there. Northern California is a beautiful place. I mean, I'm born and raised in Northern California, so, you know, it holds a very dear place in my heart. And yeah, there are a lot of really awesome communities out there. And, you know, another place you might consider, just going off topic a little bit here, but is Nevada City, Grass Valley area. A lot of really awesome people out there and, you know, affordable land. And it's just a special place.
Have you spent much time in Oregon?
Yeah, absolutely. I have familial ties to Southern Oregon specifically. So, yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, that's my obsession currently.
Yeah, Ashland is an amazing community. And that entire area, you know, the Rogue Valleys, it's a really special place.
Yeah. There's just certain places you go to that you're like, whoa, the energy here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really magical. I want to check really quick and see if there's any other questions that people have asked. Most of them we've touched on with our conversation is ready already. Someone's asking about the differences in sage and Palo Santo. Do they do the exact same thing? What is your take on that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really common question we see quite a bit. I think fundamentally, you know, they're used for a very similar purpose, and that is, you know, cleansing, vibrational reset. For me personally, you know, it's like, do I love sage? Of course I do. I love sage. I mean, I'm a little biased, you know. I probably would, you know. I'm more of a Palo Santo fan myself, but it's not really a competition of like one or the other, right? They're coexisting. But yeah, I mean, as long as the sage is cultivated properly, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with sage use. And in terms of its metaphysical properties, you know, there's a reason it's been used for so long. You know, these are not new trends or new phases or cycles. I mean, we're simply seeing the reemergence of something that's been practiced for a long time, you know? So in terms of its specific metaphysical property differences, you know, I'm one of those guys that I believe that every stone does have a signature vibrational energy about it, and as such, you know, would be more suited for certain applications, of course. But I also believe that, you know, each form is so unique and so individual that interaction of that particular medium, be it a crystal or be it a sage bundle or a Palo Santo stick, is going to greatly vary depending on the individual. So, you know. I mean, it's just my take.
Yeah. Personal preference, I think, is huge.
Yeah.
So whenever anybody asks me for a specific, like, stone suggestion or what could I use, I'm like, well, what do you feel?
Right. Let me just say this also. It's like for those who say, oh, no, this is how it is and this is what you use it for and that's what you use that for. And if you're not doing it like that, you're not doing it right. And this is the process. This is the way. Once again, be weary of those who are trying to dictate your journey and tell you what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah. Stay curious. I like that. We have touched quite a bit on stones. I do like to bring a stone into the room that I think embodies the person or the conversation that we're having. And when I think of Palo Santo, I really think of like transmuting energy, clearing, cleansing, like we've touched on. A stone that I find very similar energy to that is black tourmaline. So we have some black tourmaline in the room.
Awesome. I was looking forward to that part. I was curious which stone you would select. And it's funny because I actually kind of guessed that it might be black tourmaline.
Did you really?
I did.
So there's some black tourmaline next to you. Black tourmaline, I think, is just so fascinating. There's so many different qualities to it that you can really tell just by touching it. If it's a little bit looser, it's not as dense. If it breaks apart, the pieces that you have on the table, those are a little bit looser. They're not the highest quality. But it's really magical to see the differences. And some of these that appear black, they have other colors in. And I just nerd out and get really into it. Did you guess any other crystals that I might have brought in?
I was curious, but black tourmaline is one of the first things that went by my mind. But yeah, was there another stone?
A selenite, which is what they're on. I sometimes, because
nice.
I use that for cleansing, I figured. But It just feels a little different. I feel like black tourmaline is more like the smoky, like...
It's a good contrast, the selenite with the black tourmaline.
Yeah.
It's a good combination.
They go well together. But yeah, I'm looking forward to next month is the Tucson Gem Show, and that is where I really get to meet with the people that bring, and it's probably very similar to what you were talking about, visiting the different communities, the different farms, like getting to meet the actual people. You can totally tell when it's somebody that you want to get these stones from. And I think that that's what's so huge about being able to be in person. And it is the like premier place where everyone from all over the world comes and brings their stones and you get to talk with them. And my favorite people to support are like the wife is the one writing my invoice. Her son is the one wrapping my stones up. The husband is the one telling me about, you know, the price or whatever it is, and like seeing that it's an actual family is always so powerful to me.
The energy will undoubtedly guide you to exactly who you are supposed to meet at an event like Tucson, you know.
Yeah. Have you been to that gym show before?
You know what's funny is literally to this day, I know as crazy as it is, I have still not been to Tucson during the show. And it's really crazy because obviously there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends who are very heavy in the gem and mineral space. And, you know, the reason simply is that the time just hasn't come for me yet. So, you know, I look forward to when that time does arrive. This year, I will be down south. So, unfortunately, I'm not going to make it this year. But, yeah, I greatly look forward to when we do make it to Tucson.
It is so crazy. I mean, I did a show where I explained it, but I still think that until you do see it, like... Right. The fact that it's the entire city, it's not just, like, one or two buildings, it's... the entire city. It's super overwhelming. So you're right, though, in like listening to, I try to leave so much open to just, okay, like there's some space today, whatever, whoever I'm supposed to talk to, I'm supposed to talk to. But if you go in there with a list of like what you think you're going to find, it's completely the opposite.
Right.
Like 1 year I saw rose quartz spheres everywhere. And the next year I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to go. I'm going to get a ton. Started this wait list, people that were interested. Couldn't find them anywhere, like the whole city.
Of quartz.
Yeah.
Right.
Of quartz. But it happens that way. But that is the most fascinating part, I think. So when you do get to go, yeah, I could see it being very...
Definitely.
Symbiotic that
yeah, would love to have a booth presence at Tucson. You know, so
totally
when that time
that.
Aligns, we'll definitely be out there.
Yeah, it's really magical.
Awesome.
Well, if you're in the market for any stones, tell me. I'll private shop it for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
That is a fun part about going is the private shopping. But like I just said, you never know what you're going to find. So I'm like, whatever I'm meant to find this year.
Keep an eye out for those moldavite pieces.
Yeah. That's one thing too. Moldavite, they're finding so many fake glass versions of moldavite. And Lexi and I walked by this booth and they had a legitimate tub that was like 4 feet tall, like deep, huge, and they just had a sign that said this is moldavite, like so much per kilo, and we're like,
right.
This is not moldavite.
Yeah, all you got to do is just grab the stone, hold it in your palm, and you'll know within mere moments whether or not it's the real deal or not.
I'm sure some people are like, what, really? But no, I agree. Same thing with if things are like dyed or heat treated,
right,
or whatever.
Oh yeah, I mean, look at, you know, heat treated amethyst. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that citrine that is often portrayed as being citrine is actually heat treated amethyst. You know, they put those geos in big ovens and they bake them, and that's what gives it that real bright orange, you know. And real genuine citrine is, in my opinion, more beautiful anyway. It's just very different appearance, you know. I'll never forget the first time I found out. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not citrine? Oh no, it's heat baked amethyst, one of my mineral buddies. I'm like, oh, okay.
And it's really interesting because they will have signs that just say citrine, but if
Absolutely.
You do ask them, they will tell you, oh no, we heated it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why don't you have it on the sign?
I know, it's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, but I agree that natural citrine, and there is actually one of my favorite mines out of Brazil. It is like almost a green citrine. I'll show it to you out there
green
if you didn't
citrine.
See it.
That sounds pretty
or
awesome.
It just has like more green tones to it, but they thought they were opening another amethyst pocket and it was all of this like very interesting yellow, like yellowy green citrine. I agree though. There is a range though, but most of the time you can straight up ask them how they found it and they'll tell you if they heated it
That's
or not.
Awesome.
But
Wishing a productive and lovely trip out of Tucson this year.
Thank you. I'm super excited for it. But yeah, definitely I bring tons of sticks of Palo Santo and do some mega clearing of everything that I'm grabbing and touching and
absolutely
seeing. Do you have any questions for me or anything you would love to include in this episode before we wrap up?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that the listeners of your podcast have probably heard this one a few times. But what was the catalyst for your line and for doing the bath bomb specifically? And did you start with other products and did you pivot into the bath bombs, or was it bath bombs right from the jump?
What a good question. So the bath bomb, the moon ball, is what started Moon Body Soul, strictly because I had injured myself. I was taking a lot of baths. I was really trying to understand my body. I was going through a big just awakening of what am I putting in my body? What am I eating? What is happening? Because I had found out that I had Hashimoto's, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, an autoimmune disorder that was with my thyroid. And so I was really looking at what am I doing? Like, how am I helping this? How am I hurting this? And what I found was there are so many things that are estrogen mimickers. So your thyroid is helping you with your hormones and your overall hormone health. And so I was looking at what were estrogen mimickers, and some big ones were in this personal care products, fragrances, dyes, and certain ingredients. So I was just looking at what I was using, and I saw that these bath bombs I were using were 98% natural. And I was thinking, well, why can't they be 100%
natural? What's up with that 2%, though?
Yeah, what is that 2%? So it started just as a simple thing. I'm going to make a bath bomb that's 100% natural. My mom knew how to make bath bombs. I asked her if she could teach me. I flew home to Kansas. She showed me the process, but she was not making them natural. Hers were not even close to 98%. But I was questioning every single ingredient we were using. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just take your recipe. I'll swap a few things out and it'll be easy. And it was so not easy.
Of course.
I found out that most of the ingredients in bath bombs are there to keep the ball in place and no other reason, no benefit to the bather, nothing right for your body, strictly just to have this like cute little ball.
Right.
So it took me about a year to, when we started, you asked what year I started. It took me an entire year to finally get the recipe correct. And even the week that we were launching the website, I was still having some batches completely. So you have to, you make it and then you let it sit and then let it dry out and then you can use it. And it would get to like finally drying out and just fall apart or crumble or crack or like, so there was a waiting time where you'd think right you think that you'd figured it out. And then 24 hours later, you're like,
the formulation, R&D.
Yeah. So that is what started it, was the bath bomb, the moon ball. And now I'm at a place where I'm really considering stopping the moon balls altogether, which
really
sounds crazy. But I am also really trying not to use any single use plastics. And currently the way that we have to ship the moon ball is with
right
plastic. So I found we have this thing called dust, which was actually created because of the moon balls crumbling, where I was just repurposing the ingredients into this dust, adding Epsom salts, adding flowers. And I found compostable packaging for that. So I'm super stoked about that.
Nice.
But as far as like the actual ball itself, for it to stay in that shape and not get crushed in shipment, there's like a little plastic container. And yes, it's recyclable. Yes, you can reuse it. But do I really want to have a single use plastic?
Right, right.
So
it's tricky. It's hard, you know, with all the materials out. I mean, we're definitely seeing a major shift in that space very quickly here, you know, and a lot of companies are springing up offering alternative packaging solutions. You know, just one company just off the top of my head, not personal endorsement, but we do love them. We do use them for a number of our products, Eco and Close. They're
yeah,
really good. You
we
know,
use their
yeah
envelopes as well.
Yeah, their mailers are sweet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing more companies like that pop up for sure. So
we are. And that's yeah the big difference is when I started this 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago, there were no compostable bags on the market. There were no options for, you know, corn-based plastic or whatever it is. Like that was just not even available, especially for a small company.
Right.
But even now there is a little bit of a jump. Like if I am going to find somebody to recreate my current packaging into a compostable form, my minimum would be just so massive.
I know, it's
I'm
pretty
just not
crazy.
There yet.
I know, it's wild. But you know, like Eco and Clothes, you know, that's where they come in, and they really do serve the small and medium sized businesses, which historically is an underserved market for this particular product. So, you know, things are changing greatly and quickly, and it's really amazing just to be a part of it and to witness it, you know. So it's exciting.
For sure. And the company that I'm getting the compostable bags for my dust, it's really incredible that they're able to offer like a smaller minimum. They're offering like a whole product line that small companies can use. So I am excited to switch into that. But when it comes to the ball, I'm like, do I give up the product that started it? Do I give up an alternative to a shitty bath bomb?
Right.
Just because. And I think I'm at the place now where I'm like, I'm going to use what I have now. And then when I run out, I'll either have the answer or...
I have faith that it whatever happens will be what is so intended. So, you know, I'm sure of that.
Long story short, there's your answer to the question. It was the moon balls that started it. But it really evolved and shifted into something a little bit more well-rounded of self-care. Just anything that has to do with self-care.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Well-rounded.
Well-rounded. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, a more like holistic approach to self-care, all facets. So
it's awesome.
That is what started it, but I'm trying to definitely cover more facets. It's just not as simple as taking a bath.
And just before we wrap it up, what is one of the greatest lessons that you've learned along your entrepreneurial journey?
Oh, you're turning the story right back around to me. Okay. I think just being able to honor myself and balance the work with self-care, because I can sit here and preach all day of why you should take care of yourself and how you should take care of yourself and give you all these options. But truth of the matter is when you are hustling and you're trying to do every single thing yourself, that can be one of the easiest things to drop
right
off the wayside. So I think this past year I've learned it even more so, but, handing things off to others, trusting other people has been huge. That's been a big lesson in order to provide myself space to then better care.
That's awesome. And I know it is truly so cliche, but it is so true. When they say you have to step out of your comfort zone to take it to the next level, it's like that is one of the truest things I've heard in this journey. And it's not until you truly take that leap and you jump and you say, all right, you know, I'm stepping out of the comfort zone, that you will see that growth and that expansion. And it's really amazing. It's an amazing ride.
Yeah. And it's not just like that one time, then the next thing
Indeed.
Will be the next step.
Indeed.
And then the next thing is the next step.
You just got to keep stepping out of the comfort zone, right?
It's true. That's where the real change happens.
Indeed.
But I am at that place right now in year like 4 or 5 of the launch. It's just like, man, this is another like big step to take. Do we go for it? And we were kind of talking about this before we started recording. I have no reason to believe that things haven't always gone the way they should. So like, why now?
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, go for it. Absolutely.
Go for it. Thank you so much, Ian, for coming on here and asking me questions, turning it around.
Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
Is there any final thoughts that you want to share?
Yeah. I mean, I would just say, if anyone's still listening, I would say, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, do not let others narrate and guide your own inner journey. You already know what is right and what is wrong, and you do not need other people to tell you that. So, you know, while it's important to respect and understand and appreciate the input and advice of others, don't let them dictate your own spirituality, and don't let them guide your own journey. You know, that is a relationship between you and source consciousness, and that's the end of it, you know? Or I should say that's just the beginning of it. So, you know, I wish all of you the best of luck in your own journeys, and just remember that love is the answer and love is the way at the end of the day.
Yes to that. There's an Alan Watts quote that I feel like sums that up so perfectly. It's, "Kindly let me help you or you'll drown," said the monkey putting the fish up in the tree.
Like, indeed.
Love that one so much. You know better than
indeed
someone else. Indeed. Thank you so much, Ian, for coming on the show. If you guys want to find out more about One Love Holistics, you can find them at oneloveholistics.com.
Exactly.
And at One Love Holistics, O-N-E.
Yep, at One Love Holistic on social. Yeah, without the S. Yeah.
With no S on social.
Yeah, One Love Holistic, yeah.
Okay, I thought I was going crazy. I thought there wasn't an S, but there is an S on your website.
Yeah, we go by both, One Love Holistic, One Love Holistics, yeah.
Okay. But you can find them there if you have any questions. You want to reach out to them. If you buy our Palo Santo, this is exactly who we get it from. If you have any other questions, please let us know. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much for listening to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to hear more and leave us a review. If you have any special guests or any requests that you'd like to hear on the podcast, please send us an email to hello@moonbodysoul.com.